Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirayat. Nashta Prayeshu Abhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, one should offer respectful obeisances unto Narayan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, unto Naranarayan Rishi, the Supermost Human, unto Mother Saraswati, the Goddess of Learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the Author. By regular attendance and classes on the Bhagavatam, and by rendering of service to the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is destroyed, almost to nil, and loving devotional service unto the Supreme Person, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. Oops. Request the blessings of the Vaishnavas, and especially the senior Vaishnavas who are listening today, that I may say something helpful today. And I also wanted to dedicate this class to Shamali Devidasi, who is preparing to leave her body. So we are in Canto 1, Chapter 8, Verse 7. The name of the chapter is Prayers by Queen Kunti and Parikshit Saved. So, Verse 7. Amantra Pandu Putramscha.
Amantra Pandu Putramscha.
Shaine Yodhava Samyutaha. Dvaipayana Dibir Vipray. Pujitai Prati Pujitaha. Amantra Pandu Putramscha. Shaine Yodhava Samyutaha. Dvaipayana Dibir Vipray. Pujitai Prati Pujitaha. Prabhus?
Amantraya Pandu Putramcha.
Amantraya Pandu Putramcha. Shaine Yodhava Samyutaha.
Dvaipayam Dibir Vipraha.
Dvaipayam Dibir Vipraha.
Pujita
Prati Pujitaha. Amantra Pandu Putramscha. Shaine Yodhava Samyutaha. Vaipayana Dibir Vipraya. Pujita Prati Pujitaha.
Amantra Pandu Putramscha.
Amantra Pandu Putramscha. Shaine Yodhava Samyutaha.
Vaipayana Dibir Vipraya.
Pujitaya Prati Pujitaha. Amantya Pandu Putramscha. Shaine Yodhava Samyutaha. Vaipayana Dibir Vipraya. Pujitaya Prati Pujitaha. Synonyms. Amantra, inviting, Pandu Putran, all the sons of Pandu, Cha also, Shaineya, Satyaki, Uddhava, Uddhava, Samyutta, accompanied, Dvaipayana, Adibhi, by the rishis like Vedavyas, Vipray, by the brahmanas, Pujitai, being worshipped, Pratipujitaha, the Lord also reciprocated equally. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Sri Krishna then prepared for his departure. He invited the sons of Pandu after having been worshipped by the brahmanas, headed by Srila Vyasadeva. The Lord also reciprocated greetings. Purport. Apparently, Lord Krishna was a kshatriya and was not worshipable by the brahmanas. But the brahmanas present there, headed by Srila Vyasadeva, all knew him to be the personality of Godhead, and therefore they worshipped him. The Lord reciprocated the greetings just to honor the social order that a kshatriya is obedient to the orders of the brahmanas. Although Lord Sri Krishna was always offered the respects due to the Supreme Lord from all responsible quarters, the Lord never deviated from the customary usages between the four orders of society. The Lord purposely observed all these social customs so that others would follow him in the future. The Lord purposely observed all these social customs so that others would follow him in the future. Magyana Timirandasya, Viranjana Shalakaya, Chakshu Unmutamina, Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha, Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha, Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha, Patitanam Pavanabhyo, Vaishnavebhyo Namaha. So here in the chapter, we are at the point where Krishna has established the Pandavas, and in particular Maharaj Yudhishthir, on the throne, because he wanted to establish pious rulership over the universe. And so he established the Pandavas on the throne, and then he pacified all the Kurus because they were overwhelmed with grief due to losing so many of their relatives on the battlefield. So he pacified them with absolute knowledge. And now the Lord is preparing to depart again for Dwarka. And after having completed three Ashwamedha Yagyas to glorify Maharaj Yudhishthir, everybody was in the Yagya assembly, and it said that all the brahmanas there, even though Krishna was supposedly playing the part of a kshatriya and he was in a lower order than a brahmana, but because they all knew him to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they all worshipped him. And it says that Krishna reciprocated their greetings to honor them as higher than him in the Varnashrama order. So he honored the Varnashrama system here by honoring the brahmanas from a kshatriya position. And it said in the purport that he purposely observed all these social customs so that everybody would follow him in the future. And so we're pretty familiar with the Varnashrama shloka in the Bhagavad Gita. It's 4:13, where Krishna says that he is the one who established the Varnashrama system. And it's for the upliftment of society from animal society, so that society can actually become civilized and religious. The Varnashrama system was established by Krishna himself. And the shloka is 4:13, Chaturvarnyam maya srishtam guna karma vibhagashaha tasya kartaram apimam vidhi akartaram avyayam. And one of the key phrases here in the shloka is guna karma vibhagashaha, which means that one's position in the varnashram is established by one's guna and karma, quality and birth. So who one actually is by birth. And by birth here means not being born in a certain caste, right? That's a false varnashram. Not being born in a caste, and so therefore I am that caste, but it's which qualities we were born with based on our previous lives and our previous lives, our prior work. So which qualities we're born with, that is, and which qualities we develop also through association and through work, that is our rightful position in the Varnashram system, so it's guna and by karma. And it says in that purport, the tendency of a particular man toward work is determined by the modes of material nature which he has acquired, right? Acquired from by birth, from previous actions, from previous lives. And as we know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, as Pushkar Prabhu mentioned in one of his classes, that one of their main missions, they had a few missions, one of their missions was to annihilate this false Varnashrama system, which was based on caste, which by birth, meaning being born into a caste, right? So they tried to put forward that correct Varnashrama system is by birth, meaning birth qualities which one has acquired at birth and through his life. And then we also saw the example of Ashwatthama in this chapter, how he was a false Brahmana. He was a Brahmana by birth, by caste, but he did not act as a Brahmana. As we know, he committed murder, the 5 sleeping children. And so therefore, Ashwatthama is a Brahma Bandhu and not an actual Brahmana, because he did not have the guna and the karma of a Brahmana. Okay, so here Krishna has put the Pandavas on the throne, and now he's getting ready to leave back to his home, Dwarka. And after he performed these 3 Ashwamedha Yagyas in honor of Maharaj Yudhishthira, he's getting ready to leave, and then he's approached by Mother Uttara, who is threatened by another Brahmastra weapon that Ashwatthama has thrown. So obviously he did not yet learn his lesson. He has thrown another Brahmastra to harm her embryo, which is Maharaj Parikshit, because Ashwatthama's motivation was to destroy all the Pandavas. He wanted to annihilate the Pandava lineage. So Uttara approaches Krishna, "Please protect me, please protect me, for there's no one else who can save me from the clutches of death in this world of duality." And then Krishna, he covers the embryo of Mother Uttara by his personal energy. And although the Supreme Brahmastra weapon released by Ashwatthama was irresistible and without check or counteraction, it was neutralized and foiled when confronted by Krishna. Thus saved from the radiation of Brahmastra, Kunti, the chaste devotee of the Lord, and her 5 sons, Draupadi addressed Lord Krishna as he started for home. And then we get the prayers of Queen Kunti. So I thought it would be interesting to look at in this chapter how to deal with God's plan when God's plan seems very difficult to execute. As we know, it was God's plan to establish the Pandavas on the throne because they were pious. And the Battle of Kurukshetra had to be fought in order for that to be accomplished. And so this was Krishna's plan, and the whole Bhagavad Gita had to be spoken to Arjuna to get him to execute this plan. Right, because materially, it was difficult. Right, it seemed so. To establish Krishna's plan, I have to kill my kinsmen. I have to kill my relatives. Right, so the whole Bhagavad Gita is trying to show how, yes, this may seem difficult in a material sense, but the whole point of a devotee's life is to execute Krishna's plan, is to become an instrument. Right? The whole point of devotional service is to surrender to the plan of the Lord. So the whole Gita had to be spoken to get Arjuna from the point of lamentation and, how is it possible? How can I possibly do this? To the point of where he sees that, yes, I have to execute Krishna's plan. And, Krishna tells him, "They are already put to death by my arrangement, and you, O Savyasachi, can be but an instrument in the fight." So Krishna's plan will be established no matter what, right? Krishna tells Arjuna, even if you do not fight, every one of them will be destroyed, for that is my plan. If Arjuna stopped fighting, they would die in another way. Death could not be checked, even if he did not fight. In fact, Krishna tells Arjuna, they are already dead. So, as we know, we mentioned in Shesha Prabhu's class how when there's an imbalance in irreligion, when the world gets saturated with irreligion, then the Lord comes and he corrects the situation. So this was the basis of his plan of correcting the impious situation in the universe and establishing, bringing back religion, right? Bhagavad Gita 4:7, whenever and wherever there is a decline in religious practice, O descendant of Bharata, and a predominant rise of irreligion, at that time I descend myself. Right? So he descends himself and he has this plan and he wants Arjuna to be an instrument in the plan. And then Bhagavad Gita 4:8, to deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. So the whole Gita had to be spoken for Arjuna to figure out, like, how to be the correct instrument. So I wanted to further discuss this idea of becoming an instrument in Krishna's plan, especially when it seems difficult. So similarly in our life, how do we accept Krishna's plan when materially it may seem difficult or painful or almost impossible, right? If somebody has to, for example, like leave their body because it's their time or that's Krishna's arrangement, that seems almost impossible. This isn't very difficult and very painful, and yet this is Krishna's plan. Like, so what is the proper consciousness for us to become an instrument of Krishna's plan? So the first idea I had is how to become an instrument, and then secondly, how to take shelter of Krishna, and with taking shelter, also to go deeper into Krishna consciousness, right? So one is to become an instrument, and two is to take shelter and go deeper into Krishna consciousness. When Krishna's plan is unfolding and it may seem difficult, so these are the mindsets to keep in mind. I'll become an instrument of Krishna's plan. I will take shelter of Krishna, and I will also go deeper into Krishna consciousness. And by doing so, I will become successful in my surrender, right? To Krishna's plan. Right? So, and the whole point of being a devotee is to surrender to Krishna, right? So that's what we're all trying to do every single day, right? We're trying to surrender to Krishna, right? We pray, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Please tell me how to engage me in your service, right? So that's what we are doing as devotees. We're trying to figure out how to be Krishna's instrument. Please tell me how to engage me in your service, right? We're not just, you know, coming to the temple and you know, chanting superficially and just trying to be comfortable in the material world. Like, that's not our program. Or at least if we're sincere, that's not our program. You know, if we're sincere, we're trying to be Krishna's instrument. And in the shloka in the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna tells Arjuna to fight, he tells him, you just be an instrument. My plan is already unfolded, but I would like you to just be an instrument. So, how to be an instrument. Would anybody like to put forward some ideas before I go a little more into it, how to be an instrument. Shesha Prabhu? Thank you. So I'll repeat that because Shesha Prabhu didn't have a mic. So I believe you're referring to dovetailing. Whatever is our propensity, God-given propensity, right, that we would like to utilize for our own interest, instead of doing that for our own interest, we utilize that for Krishna's interest. Thank you. Any other ideas? How are you an instrument in Krishna's plan? Or what is the difficulty?
How to execute is like following the order of the spiritual masters or the Vaishnavas.
Thank you. Madhumati says following the order of the spiritual master and serving all the Vaishnavas?
And following the orders of the Vaishnavas.
And following the orders of the Vaishnavas. Thank you. Thank you. So, my idea was to understand that ultimately Krishna's plan is the best for us, right? Even though it may seem difficult in a short run, but ultimately Krishna's plan is the best and the highest for us. And also we have to have a view towards liberation, right? So that's the whole point of Krishna consciousness, if we are sincere. Right, we ultimately want to go and we want to be with Krishna. So with a view to liberation and understanding that Krishna's plan is the best and highest for us, even though materially, in the short run, it may seem painful, we have that understanding. His plan is the best, and also we have a higher view to liberation or being with Krishna in the spiritual world. So that is devotional service, right? Again, we're not trying to become comfortable in the material world. And not that every day needs to be like painful and suffering, but when those trials come, when that purification comes, which if we are sincere in devotional service, it will come, that purification and those tests, right? When it comes, we can adjust our understanding of what it is that we're actually doing in Krishna consciousness, right? We need to get purified in order to enter into the spiritual world. So if that is our intention, then those purifications and those tests, they will come. There's a really nice purport in to that famous shloka, the Tattenu Kampanam shloka, which is 10:14:8. It's a really ecstatic purport. It says, the idea is like when we surrender, Krishna will make arrangements for our purification, and it may seem like sort of painful and really difficult, but it's actually Krishna's arrangement to get us to let go of our material conceptions and let go of our material attachments. So there's this purport to that famous shloka. Although a devotee has surrendered to the Lord's devotional service, until he is completely perfect in Krishna consciousness, he may maintain a slight inclination to enjoy the false happiness of this world. So until we are perfect, we may maintain some slight inclinations, singular or plural, inclinations, to enjoy the false happiness of this world. The Lord therefore creates a particular situation to eradicate this remaining enjoying spirit. The Lord therefore creates himself a particular situation to eradicate this remaining enjoying spirit. This unhappiness suffered by a sincere devotee is not technically a karmic reaction. It is rather the Lord's special mercy for inducing his devotee to completely let go of the material world and return home back to Godhead. This unhappiness suffered by a sincere devotee is not technically a karmic reaction. It is rather the Lord's special mercy for inducing his devotee to completely let go of the material world and return home back to Godhead. So I thought that was a really ecstatic shloka. Does anybody want to share how they may have experienced that, or if it's too private, you know, that's okay too. But if anybody wants to add something to that purport that I just read, Krishna makes, if we are sincere and we surrender, then Krishna himself makes these arrangements of situations which may seem painful, and which may be painful, not seem painful, but be painful. But they are to get the sincere devotee to let go of his last vestiges of propensity to enjoy material happiness in this world. So Krishna makes those arrangements for the sincere devotee. And to that end, I wanted to also read a little bit from Mother Samapriya's book, Divine Love Trip. As we know, she's a poet laureate of ISKCON. So she writes here, what is the nature of a servant? To what does he aspire, if not to satisfy the Lord for fulfilling the Lord's desire? What is the nature of a servant? To what does he aspire, if not to satisfy the Lord fulfilling his desire? So that is what I was saying, that is what we're trying to do in Krishna consciousness, surrender to the Lord's desire for ourselves and for our life. There is a gracious concert we sing with harmony. Every soul who gives his life plays in this symphony. So there's a concert going on, and each of us is a participant in the symphony, and we each have a part to play. Krishna is the grand conductor, molding us like clay, preparing us to join with him. He knows for what we pray. So Krishna is the grand conductor, molding us like clay, right? So this molding may involve some material suffering, right? But he's trying to, it's actually, like we just read, it's actually his mercy. I'm trying to mold you. I know it may seem painful in the short run or temporarily, but I'm trying to help you become who you're supposed to become. Right? Sometimes the song he makes us sing brings us to our knees. As we cry our broken hearts, we beg him to appease. Let me be an instrument, enthused I play your song, and glorify your holy name for the sound I long. But if you choose to crush me in your divine embrace, then keep your feet upon my heart in their rightful place. That's really nice. But if you choose to crush me in your divine embrace, then at least keep your feet upon my heart in their rightful place. It's nice. And just one more short thing. It is the plan of the Lord, whatever comes to be, acceptance with a gracious heart can only set one free. What happens in our lives today is not a random matter. Things precisely fall into place, no arbitrary scatter. Though sometimes it's a grueling test, Krishna's plan is always best. So that is about a little bit about how to become an instrument, and then the second idea was how to participate in God's plan, especially when it's painful, is to take shelter of Krishna and go deeper into Krishna consciousness. Right? So whenever material suffering comes, it is actually an opportunity to go, to take shelter and to go deeper into Krishna consciousness. And we have to understand that Krishna is our only true shelter. Right? There's a nice purport in 1.8.17. It talks about a chaste devotee. A chaste devotee of the Lord does not look to others, other living beings or demigods, for deliverance from danger. That was all along the characteristic of the whole family of the Pandavas. They knew nothing except Krishna, and therefore the Lord was always ready to help them in all respects and in all circumstances. He reciprocates the dependence of the devotee. One should not therefore look for help from imperfect living beings or demigods, but one should look for all help only from Krishna, who is competent to save his devotees. Right? So a chaste devotee only looks to Krishna to take shelter. And in this chapter also we hear Mother Uttara, when she was taking shelter of Krishna when Ashwatthama had released the second Brahmastra, Mother Uttara says, "Please protect me, please protect me, for there is no one else who can save me from the clutches of death in this world of duality. In the world of duality, everyone is envious of all others, and death is inevitable due to the dual existence of matter and spirit. The Lord is the only shelter of fearlessness for the surrendered soul. The Lord is the only shelter of fearlessness for the surrendered soul." It's also a practice it's a nice practice to exercise this idea, I think, in Kali Yuga especially, when we truly don't have any other shelters, right? Before Kali Yuga, there were like pious kings, like, you know, Maharaj Yudhishthira and Maharaj Prithu, and they were supposed to offer all protection to all their to all the citizens and all the praja of their kingdom, you know, everyone, even the animals. Right? So if there was a pious leader, the citizens could take shelter also of the pious king, but in Kali Yuga, we don't have that. So we really practice in Kali Yuga to fully take shelter of Krishna and Lord Chaitanya and the holy name. Right? So that is, we can see that as one benediction of Kali Yuga. We have no other shelter but the holy name. And another purport in this chapter says, this condition of helplessness, when one is only taking shelter of Krishna, or when one is suffering and he needs to take shelter of Krishna, in this condition of helplessness, the devotee becomes more attached to the Lord. The more the attachment there is for the Lord, the more success is there for the devotee, right? So sometimes Krishna even arranges these situations that make us completely helpless, and that is for our benefit, so that we can take deeper shelter of him and deepen our Krishna consciousness. It's also a benediction from the Lord for the sincere devotee, because it's very nice purport in when Narada Muni relates how Krishna had taken away all his shelters, including he only had his mother to take care of him, and Krishna took away his mother when he was very young, right? She was bitten by a snake. And Narada Muni relates how, you know, this made him go deeper into taking shelter of only Krishna, because he had no other shelter. And in that purport, Prabhupada says very nicely, mundane prosperity is a kind of material fever, and by the grace of the Lord, the temperature of this material fever is gradually diminished. Right? So by the grace of the Lord, the temperature of this material fever is gradually diminished, and spiritual health is obtained step by step. Mundane people misunderstand it. And we'll hear coming up in the prayers of Mother Kunti, she says to that same idea, that those who are materially satisfied, here it is, a helpless man can feelingly utter the holy name of the Lord, whereas a man who utters the same holy name in great material satisfaction cannot be sincere, right? A helpless man can feelingly utter the holy name of the Lord, whereas a man who utters the same holy name in great material satisfaction cannot be sincere. Right, so I'll stop there. I have some other things, but I think that's enough. Right, so we talked about how to accept Krishna's plan for our lives, even in spite of, and even when that seems really difficult and almost impossible, right? We have to understand that Krishna's plan is the highest and best for us. We have to take a view to liberation from material existence, stopping the repetition of birth and death. And to do so, we should try to, one, become an instrument of the Lord, and two, take shelter of Krishna and go deeper into Krishna consciousness. So I'll stop there and see if there's any questions or discussions.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the class. You portrayed surrendering to Krishna and accepting Krishna's plan almost exclusively in terms of pain and trouble and difficulty, but does the test come the other way also?
Well, thank you. That's a nice point. No, of course it's not all negative. But when things are going well, we don't need as much like enforcement, right? But yes, actually, the surrender, the purification can be painful, but once we get to that next level, once we've been purified to some extent, we can feel more ecstasy, right? And we can feel closer to Krishna, and we can feel more free of being entangled in material existence. So thank you, I appreciate that point. No, it's not all painful. This was sort of to help us when it is painful, but it's certainly, I think, more ecstatic than painful overall, right? And we just have to see the pain in the context of purification. And once we get through it, it's not like it goes on forever, right? We do get through it eventually, and then we can experience more bliss in Krishna consciousness, and we can feel our hearts, you know, melting away, that steel frame on our heart, we can feel it melting away, and we can even be grateful for that difficulty or for that purification. Okay? Thank you. Anyone else?
The Lord's so kind.
Thank you.
Oh, we have a mic. Because I have personal experience of intense suffering just recently, and even though I read these verses over and over and over again, and I keep telling myself these things over and over again, still, it's really difficult when you're in it, and even when you're in it, the mind is so fickle and Maya is so strong that there's distractions even from, you know, when it's right in your face. And like you say, here's the opportunity to surrender, go deeper, you know, and still the mind's like, I'm bailing out, I'm out of here, this is too weird. And this is the test, this is the test that the devotees have. And when you read that verse, Tatena Kampan Sushamikshamana, it says, Bunjana Evatma Kritam. That means that we did it to ourselves. So whatever we're in, and it's not just that, but that is where it all started from. We started this thing, and now it's caught up to us.
That's a really nice point.
And the nice,
nice point,
part is that Krishna loves us, and he always has our interests at heart. And I keep telling Radhe that, and I keep telling myself this, because I believe this. This is my faith. So, but still, it's really, really, really test.
Of course, it's really, it's not easy.
Sometimes you fail miserably.
Everything else you can kind of handle, right? But when that comes, it's like, how am I going to handle that? Yeah.
And it's the same every time. You surrender, and it's actually it's your only move. You really can't do anything else but surrender. But you got to know that Krishna loves us. And I was just reading two nights ago in Krishna book, when Rukmini sent the messenger, that Brahmin, he took the message to Krishna. And what they did is when he got there, Krishna, of course, they fed him and they gave him new clothes and said, take a bath. And he made him really comfortable. And then they said, go take rest. And they gave him a beautiful bedroom and he got in the bed and he laid down and he fell asleep. And then you know what Krishna did? Krishna snuck in that room, and he went in there, and he sat on the bed, and he gave the Brahmin a massage. He rubbed his feet. That's how much Krishna loves his devotees. And he was so thankful that he brought the message from Rukmini. And he sat there, and he asked him if there was anything he could do to serve him as he's giving him a massage. And that just makes you feel like, okay, Krishna's
Thank
there.
You. Yeah, that's a really nice point. All these tests and arrangements that Krishna sends is because he loves us. And he wants us to come back to him, right? So we can also... It's another, tool that we can utilize when those tests come. It's like, okay, Krishna's doing it because he loves me and because he wants me to get rid of these nasty material conceptions. And how fortunate we are, yeah, and he's like right there with Radharani, and we can come see him, right? Anyone else? Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Thank you.